Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I'd probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
This is Tech Talk. I think I've got Dave here somewhere, too.
Is it Tech Talk?
Oh.
It could be Tech Talk. Am I there? Is that me?
That is you.
Hi, everybody.
You.
Welcome to the show.
Wow.
That's
wow.
Michael Tech Talk Kassler. I'm Dave Sparky Saganaki. And we're trying to work out the usual bugs. I don't know. I'm
hearing crackles and pops and whistles and bangs.
It's making me hungry for cereal.
All the other stuff. Yeah. So it's the usual Tech Talk show. As we start off with some some things. I'm not using my regular headphones either. I've got these kind of junky little things.
Those are very nice Sennheisers, actually.
Oh, are they? These are top of the line. They just feel rinky-dink on
those belong to the station. Those are property of WRLR.
So they must be top notch.
They've been rewired by hand. And
yes. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome everybody. Sorry we missed you last week.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, too, I think it's going to be 2 weeks that we're going to miss in the next
really?
Set. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm going to Wisconsin. We're going up to Rhinelander, Wisconsin, our usual trip.
Going to the Rhinelander.
Oh, yeah.
Have a beer and a brat.
I might be able to convince my wife that we really don't need to leave until about noon on Saturday, but my guess is that discussion's not going to go as well as I would like.
Well, I'll be around. I would be available next week, but this the week of the 15th, I think I will not.
Well, the 15th, we're definitely not. I know. Even I won't even. I don't want to come back early. I know when I'm up there, I'm going to just want to
So. You never want to come home.
Exactly. But speaking of top notch, we do have a top notch show lined up for the day today. And it is going to be. Oh, hey! I think I just figured out why Dave pointed out to me why we're clipping.
We're driving too fast because we're going too fast.
We're clipping. We were clipping here. I apologize. The audio in the beginning here was not great. It should be a little bit better now. it's all that radio jargon I like to throw around every once in a while. Yeah. We almost feel like
it confuses me.
Yeah, it confuses you. Believe me. Anyways, we got a top notch program today. We got, of course, the usual, ubiquitous, inimitable, any other kind of word you want to throw at him. Jay Garman is going to be here with Geek Trivia. He and Customer Jones are in a heated battle. Customer Jones did reply this week to the Geek Trivia contest. Anybody can reply to those Geek Trivia questions. I want to remind you, send an email to techtalk@wrlr.fm. You know, I think I got to sweeten the pot a little bit again. I've got a bunch of books and all sorts of like little
swag that have
collected over the months here that for one reason or another just didn't ever make it out the door. People didn't send me their addresses even though they won the contest, you know, things like this.
They expected you to ship it via email.
I guess. I don't know.
this whole thing with Customer Jones and Jay is sort of like a King Kong versus Godzilla. Or Dr. Evil versus Austin Powers.
It's the unstoppable force versus the something along those lines.
The clash of intellectual titans.
Clash of titans. Yeah. Clash of the titans.
Trivia titans.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Almost as quickly as Jay can spit out the question, Customer Jones is able to dredge it out of somewhere and throw it at us. So that'll be good. And then immediately following that, continuing with the geek theme of the day, this is fantastic. I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, that's a special day for us?
I'm going to theme this one geek as opposed to just the regular where the geekness shows through. I'm intentionally geeking us today. We're going to have John Graham coming, who is joining us from England, and he is going to talk to us about the geek Atlas, 128 places where science and technology come alive. I wish we had been able to get him on a little bit earlier this summer. I actually had it scheduled and we had to cancel because of some issues in my schedule, not his. But this is fantastic. If you're still planning some summer road trips or getting out at all, even if you're not, it really doesn't matter. This is just a really, really cool book. It goes through just a huge number of not only locations where cool geek things have happened or are happening, but also to really detailed technical descriptions of the science behind the geek activity there.
Those breakthroughs.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
It's a compendium of geek hallowed ground.
If you will. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
If I will, I just did.
It's fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to speaking with John Graham Cumming.
Yeah.
And that's about it. You know, I think it's going to be a good one this week. Now I want to bring up one thing, before we call Jay though. I want to call Jay fairly quickly this morning. I promise that I would. But before we do that, I have to do this. I've got some, I don't know if I have the news up on my screen here. Unfortunately, I don't, but I've got to get in and I told you so. You know how much
Yahoo and Microsoft.
There's that. Yeah that's the one. Although, you know, the disappointing thing, if people hadn't heard, Yahoo and Microsoft penned a deal finally where they said, you know what, we're going to share search. And basically, right. Microsoft took over Yahoo's search, and Microsoft was so excited and proud of their Bing that they've said, get rid of this lame old Yahoo search business. We're going to replace it with the Bing behind. And,
but I guess the deal was done for a lot less money than originally proposed.
Yeah, a lot less.
What was the other I told you so?
The one thing I want to, just to finish with that Yahoo thing, is one thing that shocked me about that, unfortunately, was I was really excited because Yahoo was creeping up the stocks again. They were up to like 17, which is the highest they'd been in months and months and months since their all-time high of 27 or 28 back when I purchased.
But this deal actually knocked the wind out of them.
It just crushed them. Yeah, they dropped like $3 in about 2 hours. Microsoft, on the other hand, did quite well out of it. So, anyways, if I was going to put money on anything right now, it'd probably be RIM, because I'm excited about the Storm 2 coming out, and I think that's gonna knock the wind out of the iPhone sales. But that's a story for another day. The news, the other I told you so. You may remember, I think it was the week before last, we were talking about how Amazon had pulled the 1984 books
of
the Orwell collection.
In fact, I thought of this. I read that story, but there's a lawsuit.
Yes, there is.
From a high school student?
Yes, it is. That's exactly.
When they snatched the his digital copy of 1984 from his Kindle, it contained his annotations and notes.
Yep.
I guess it's the same thing. But it basically stole his homework.
Yes, that's what he says. He says, the Kindle ate my homework.
Right.
So he's suing. Now, I didn't get how much he was suing for or what he's kind of saying.
I guess his lawyer came with him to class to talk to the teacher. Speculation.
Today it wouldn't surprise me.
That's what I needed when I was a kid.
Is a lawyer?
Every day in class. At school. I needed a lawyer on retainer. That would have been a much better student, I think.
I'm not sure how much he's charging or how much they're trying to sue for. I was trying to figure out, too, you know, what kind of a case, I mean, other than the emotional distress of, I have to redo, you know, I don't know, 8 hours of work or something, is he kind of going to try to play the, well, if I get a C in this course, that blows my 4.0, which means I won't be... I won't be the valedictorian.
It turns out they violated their own terms of service, or Euler, or whatever, you know, double speak device that they use to extract as many dollars as possible from us. I read some article about, DRM is pretty much dead as far as music goes. And this is, I don't know how deep we want to get into this. I know that you want to call Jay. But DRM is, digital rights management is pretty much dead, except for print. Except for books. Oh. And in this case, you know, that's something that even the RIAA has never thought about doing, is snatching music back off of people's hard drives.
Yeah, trying to take it back away. Yeah.
And this isn't the first time I discovered they did it with some Ayn Rand books and somebody else, I forget.
But oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that this was the first time they actually pulled out.
It had happened, but this one made more news, I think, maybe because of the huge irony factor of you know, snatching back 1984.
It did really pick up a lot of steam, I think, because of that. But no, I hadn't heard about that. So
DRM, you know,
but you could have made some good copy out of the Ayn Rand stuff. You know, Amazon shrugged.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, it took me 2 seconds to think of that. Somebody smarter than me could have come up with some good ones.
But they did, you know. But that's really nefarious, though. There's just something real that makes you, you know, kind of tense up when you hear that.
Yeah.
You did
yeah.
what? You took one off my hard drive?
Exactly. Hey. I paid for it. I bought it. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, is only possible with these digital media now. You know, no one's going to come into your, well, I mean, they could, but typically no one's going to come into your home and take books off of your shelf. They're not going to come in and pull CDs out of your collection.
Well,
personally,
books, I know CDs are, but books are definitely burglary proof.
Yeah.
People,
yeah.
you know, put your money in books, nobody's going to steal them. I think that's an old Chris Rock line or something.
That's and, you know, and that's, yeah, that's that's exactly right. I mean, and you've got, you know, Bradbury and Fahrenheit 451. At least they didn't pull that out of the canon. So that.
Well, they wouldn't pull it. They nuke it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They delete it, and then you'd have the fireplace screensaver.
It's place. I like it.
You better
like
call it. Jay. Better
yeah,
call Jay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We should, because otherwise, I'm going to start getting on how the Apple is coming out with their tablet, and how I think that is going to kill the Kindle, especially with how cheap some of these tablets are.
Jay,
good morning, Mr. Garmin.
Hey, fellas.
Hey,
welcome to the show, Jay. You sound fantastic.
Yeah, we've actually got a show today.
Yeah, it's amazing and everything.
I know. And we're doing all sorts of fun stuff here. I've got us, we're broadcasting on justin.tv/WRLR. Also, too, if you're following my tweets, I'm actually using TwitCam today. I don't know how well the audio is working if you're viewing through TwitCam, and if you've been sending me Twitters, I've not been paying any attention at all to them, just because I'm not that good at multitasking. But
you and Sarah Palin.
So there, hey, and yeah. Yeah. I saw her approval ratings plummeted by 46% or something. It's like, man, I've got 3 kids and a wife, and I'm thinking, if my approval rating around the house was 46%, I'd be pretty darn happy. So I don't know what they're complaining about. But
here, Jay, we have Jay Garmin, whose approval rating, as always, 100%.
104.
Because you're not polling my wife and daughter, absolutely.
Well, maybe Customer Jones might have a different.
Yeah. You get a 98% because Customer Jones brings the average down, and the wife and daughter. So, anyways, as promised, I actually got you on here pretty early today, and Customer Jones, as usual, is excited, I know, to hear the answer to last week's question, which was what? And tell me if I've got this wrong. Which was what was brought to the moon specifically for the purpose of adding some extra cachet to its value, I guess. I'm not sure how to.
I think I might know this one.
Oh, yeah. Dave's.
Yeah, it was Apollo 11. What special item was taken specifically to create a collector's item? And this actually involved a conspiracy of a couple of different departments of the U.S. government.
Who kept it secret,
almost. They kept it secret for months and months and months while it was being planned, and then they accidentally outed it a week before launch. So luckily, the department that outed it, no one pays attention to, because what Apollo 11 took along was a master die to create stamps for the U.S. Postal Service they could create stamps that were postmarked from the moon. Unfortunately, Postmaster General William Blount let out a press release a week before launch letting people know this was going to happen. But he still was wrong after the fact, because what happened was, what should come as no real surprise, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin had a lot to do in about the 22 hours they actually were on the moon, and they didn't have time to actually cast the die and create postmarked letters from the surface of the moon. So they didn't, and they didn't actually do it until the return trip. So the letters and whatnot that were cast using this die say Moon Landing USA July 20th, 1969, except they were done in translunar space on July 22nd, 1969. So it's actually a fraudulent postmark.
So does that mean that
which does
it's
make it more valuable? But
is it illegal to use it then? I assume.
I think it is illegal, but I don't think it was ever intended for actual. They've never cast any real stamps off this die. It does sit in the Smithsonian, from what I understand, and they use something like it to make a 10-cent airmail stamp depicting the first man on the moon. But they didn't use that actual die because that die is now so valuable because it did go to the moon and it did cast a die in lunar space, but it didn't actually go into service. So it is in philately, which is the really odd sounding statin collecting name. That's what the pursuit is called, philately. Mm-hmm.
Is it
which sounds like a really
terrible
sitcom.
Or,
it's philately.
Is it philately or philately? I've only seen it. I don't know if I've ever heard that word said. So
After hearing it, I know why.
I guess yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
on the radio.
This is public radio here. We
yeah. Thanks for giving me a little bit of flop sweat this morning, Jay.
we'll get off of the philately.
I'm a little flushed, actually.
He is. I've got a note from customer Jones that that one of these with the cancellation sold for $77,000. So it definitely did do what it was intended to, I guess, which was bring that value up.
Absolutely, and it also it was more good press for Apollo 11, which just sort of out this and ruin this as a future trivia question. You can go on the internet and find the speech that was written for Nixon in the event that the Apollo 11 astronauts died.
Oh,
and
really?
Survived the mention? Yes, it's actually a really great speech, and it is very stirring and whatnot. But they had that in their pocket in case Armstrong and Aldrin basically couldn't leave the moon. They were fairly confident from the previous Apollo missions that they could land on the moon, but they didn't know if they could leave again.
Yeah.
So they had a speech written in the event of Armstrong and Aldrin were trapped on the moon. And it's very interesting to find. So, you know, they were leading up to this, they were genuinely concerned that this wouldn't work out. So they were trying to drum up as much positive support as they could going into it.
Well, and I guess from especially what I've been hearing lately, because, you know, with all of the pub about the Apollo 11 mission coming back out, and I was wrong too. They didn't actually get the videotapes back from that place in Australia. Those essentially were just degaussed and they're gone. It was an extremely, extremely close thing that they made it back at all. I hadn't realized, you know, you hear about the fire and some of the other things, but even just the mission itself, they knew that the percentages, if they had calculated them, were pretty dangerous. It would not be undertaken today, let's say. It would be far too risky of a mission for NASA to approve and get the funding for these days.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still go back to after the Columbia loss, they NASA brought in some Air Force test pilot investigators to really go through some special procedures of what they do when test planes are lost for the Air Force. And the first thing they said was that you don't have the space shuttle classified as a experimental aircraft. And it has to be, because all aircraft are considered experimental until they've logged 400 successful flights. Well, there won't be 400 successful flights of the space shuttle in the entire history of the program.
Yeah.
So it's never not experimental as far as the Air Force is concerned, which I think sort of to me puts it in perspective that this will always be risky. We'll never get enough, and at least I'll never say never, it would be unlikely we'll ever get enough hours or practices in at space flight that will ever be routine. It's always going to be cutting edge and risky and sort of out there, you know, on the pale blue yonder.
Yep. Yeah.
I think I saw an interview with one of the I can't remember if it was Aldrin it wasn't Armstrong, and they were talking. He was just talking about how Armstrong was getting fussy about the landing spot, and to the point where they literally were like out of fuel. You know, they had like a couple of seconds left of fuel to burn. But when they put down, sort of like somebody, I don't know if you've ever been with someone in a mall parking lot, and they just can't, you know, no parking spot's ever good enough, you know. So
yep. Well, I know. Yeah, Buzz. There's some great stories with Buzz Aldrin too, and there's a video you can find on YouTube of him punching out somebody who was suggesting that moon landing was a hoax.
Yes. I love that video. It's great.
It is fantastic. It, you know, go Buzz. That's
well, see, here's my thing about that video. Is this guy is a known denier, and I can't remember his name, but he basically walks up to Aldrin and calls him a coward and a liar. And even if you don't believe that they landed on the moon, and you're kind of a nut job if you believe that, Buzz Aldrin flew 60 combat missions in Korea. You don't get to call him a coward.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'm totally cool with Buzz just cold-cocking him right there.
Exactly. And you can see, you know, he thought about it, and then he did it. I love that. It wasn't something that, you know, he's like, you know what, I'm willing to take the consequences for this. Bam.
With cameras rolling, like, he knows he's being filmed. They're doing a television stand-up right there.
Yep.
Just, okay, bam. Not a problem.
So, anyways, what do you got? Now, we're going to have, potentially, we may be gone for 2 weeks following this week. I'm going on vacation. I may not be able to convince my wife to wait to take off until noon next Saturday. So it's possible we'll be giving listeners up to 3 weeks here to think about this next question. So what have you got for us that's going to keep the wheels spinning for a while?
Well, I'm going to go with a little particle physics here, Asanas. It's
Ooh.
Chemistry. Recently, within the past couple of weeks since we've been off the air, the International sort of chemistry authorities have suggested a name for element 112, would be a superheavy element, which has recently been known as either Eco-Mercury or Unumbium. It's basically, you know, it's been synthesized in a laboratory, you know, atomic number 112. They're going to call it Copernicium after Copernicus.
Yes.
Which I think is cool. But it's sort of always, when this happens, it always brings up the notion of the phrase synthetic element, which is sort of misleading. It's synthetic in the sense that these elements don't exist on Earth because their half-life is so short that you'll never, like, mine them in nature, but it doesn't mean they don't happen naturally. So physicists and chemists sort of get touchy about this phrase synthetic element. And in fact, a lot of things that we might consider, synthetic in that they don't meet that half-life standard are not these fancy way down the periodic table elements. In fact, there are four quote-unquote synthetic elements in that they don't occur in any significant amount in nature because their half-life is so short. They have atomic numbers lower than uranium. So that's the question. What are the four elements that are quote-unquote synthetic and that their half-life is so short they'll never be found in any significant quantity on Earth that actually have atomic numbers lower than uranium?
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah, I had just heard about Copernicium fairly recently that they had just found the name. Hey, why didn't they call it Copernicum? You know, I mean, come on. How tough is that? It must have been some English thing or something, some British thing. I'll have to bug John Graham coming when he comes on here about this Copernicium.
Yeah,
that sounds,
it's all his fault.
It is. Yeah. I'm going to hold him up as a standard for all of English and UK society, and we'll do it that way. So the four elements that are synthetic and have an atomic number less than uranium?
Yes, they appear before 92 on the periodic table. They're quote unquote normal elements, but they in fact, two of them are in fact well like are below 70.
Wow, man, I'm trying to go through. I had to memorize a significant portion of the table of the elements at one point in my career, but I don't think I could get much past 10 anymore. Hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron. Anyways, at any rate, we'll leave that to anyone that wants to send an email to techtalk@wrlr.fm. Don't let Customer Jones keep hogging the limelight here. Send something in. As I said earlier, I've actually got some goodies to send out too. So I'll start picking some of those out and throwing those at people. And you know, I don't want to beef up Customer Jones's library too much. So
yeah.
the Customer Jones Tech Talk Memorial Library wing that she's building up there. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, hey Jay, I'm going to cut us off here and move along. Thank you as always for some very interesting food for thought that should keep us occupied for a few weeks, hopefully. And I'll let you know for sure about next week as soon as I do.
We might need the time off to figure out that question.
Absolutely.
All right, take it easy, all fellas, right. And talk to you later.
Take care, Jay. Thanks. Take care, Jay. Have a great Bye. Week. As always, great to hear from Jay.
Wow.
I am not going to waste any time. We will be back in just a minute. You're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM, and we'll be back in just a minute with John Graham coming and the Geek Atlas.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
The Lake County Journals cover what matters most to you. Local news, sports, weather, and entertainment are in print each week and updated often online at lakecountyjournals.com. You can look to both to find out more about your community and your neighbors. At lakecountyjournals.com, there are interactive videos and photo galleries, or even a place to post your comment about a story. Lake County Journals and lakecountyjournals.com, your life connected.
Marcus Gurney Cinema in the Gurney Mills Shopping Mall, 6144 Grand Avenue in Gurney. For movie showtimes and advance tickets, their website is www.marcustheaters.com, or the phone number is 847-855-9940. The Marcus Gurney Cinema can host your private party, has 20 movie screens, and accommodations for the disabled. Marcus Gurney Cinema creates magical movie memories.
Previously, you can't do that on the radio.
No person shall change clothes in his or her vehicle.
I actually do that all the time, especially when I'm driving.
What's the spelling of that, Tommy?
And are you putting makeup on at the same time?
No, that I don't do.
I think I've seen you on the interstate before.
I can actually like change my shirt and stuff while, you know.
While you're driving down the expressway?
Oh, hell yeah. Yes.
You can't do that on the radio. Thursday nights, 9 o'clock. 98.3 WRLR.
And we are back. We're going to try and give John Graham coming. Now, we are making a call all the way out to England. He's somewhere in England. That's why you hear that nice...
Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Graham Cumming.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. We can. I was just saying, I think this is the first time that we've actually reached out to someone across the pond there and made it all the way to England. So I'm very happy this has worked out and connected.
We have telephones.
Yes.
We were wondering about that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Alexander Graham Bell started life here.
Boy, so you're going to hit us there, huh? You're going to hit us there.
Well, thanks for allowing us to use his invention.
Absolutely. Yeah. the fruits of his mother's labor, anyways. So at any rate, I've been trying to do a good job of introducing you, but I think I'll let you finish the job and let us know who you are and why we've brought you on, what your tome is.
Well, in real life, I'm a geek. I have a PhD, and I spent my life programming computers. And along the way, I traveled an enormous amount, and that result of that traveling is a book called The Geek Atlas, which is a travel book for geeks, really, for people interested in science and technology.
Excellent. So you're not a writer by trade. This was not, something that as a journalist you said, you know what, I'm going to put this together, people might be interested. This was something that came out of just the love of science and your love of traveling.
That's right. I mean, over the years I've written quite a lot of things just because people ask me to write them. But at heart, you know, I'm a computer programmer and I love science and technology. And so this is just a result of traveling to lots of different places and saying, I wish there was a book like this. I actually tried to buy this book, essentially. I went on Amazon and said, someone must have written a guide for people like me. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't. So that's how I ended up writing it.
Well, and well done as well. I've been mentioning on air. I mean, it's just even if the furthest you're going to get, is to the end of your driveway or your walk. This is a fantastic book just for sitting in an armchair and reading, especially on what promises to be somewhat of a rainy afternoon for us here. The thing that I like a lot about it was that instead of just identifying the location, you really spent a lot of time identifying why this is a location for geeks to go to, and then getting into the detail of some of the science behind it as well.
Well, yeah, because part of it was that I always find that when I go to a place that's scientific, I really want to have some understanding of what it means. I don't want somebody just to tell me, oh, by the way, the telephone was invented here. I'd like to understand a little bit about how the phone works. And so when I was writing the book, I had in mind the idea that you'd both want a travel part, which is it worth going to see and what's the history and what's there, but also a little bit more depth into, okay, what does it mean, for example, how does a chain reaction in a nuclear explosion work? How does the telephone work? What are some of the mathematical topics? So it is, half the book is a science book, really, and half of it is a travel book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's a really a good way to put it. But the science is presented for those for those that are a little bit put off maybe by higher mathematics. The science is really put in a very understandable and approachable way, almost like a collection of the high points or pieces with a little bit of trivia, but with a little bit of depth into it to really get understanding. Now you said you're a PhD. What is your PhD in? What
do you do? It's in computer security, actually.
Oh, really? Okay. So this really is a true labor of love, because you span the expanse of not just the computer stuff, and of course covering the Enigma machine and location of that, but also too get into some pretty deep physics and statistical stuff, and I mean all over the place, mechanical engineering, everything. Was there
a bit of biology as well? Yeah.
Was there a particular area that was more difficult for you to kind of get your head around in order to communicate to readers?
Well, definitely biology, actually, because I know obviously lots about computers, and actually my undergrad degree was in mathematics, so I'm pretty good on the mathematics side of things, although I was even rusty there. But really, biology, I mean, I remember doing it at the equivalent of high school, and that's about as far as I got, so I had to go back and learn quite a lot of things again, and that was actually part of the fun of writing the book, was, what are these science topics? Okay, how am I going to explain that? And so hopefully, what you read is, you're reading partly my own explanation to myself to try and make me understand it, and hopefully that's good for anybody else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now you said that you've done a fair amount of the traveling yourself. Have you actually gone to every location that is mentioned in the book?
No, not all of them. I've been to a tremendous number of them, because when I originally had the idea for the book, what I did was I sat down, I just made a list of places that I'd been that I thought that was interesting, and that was about 70 or so places. Mm-hmm. So that was before I even started writing. But there are still some I haven't had a chance to visit, mostly because of difficulty of scheduling being able to get to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the places, as you mentioned, are open maybe one day out of the year or 2 days out of the year, things like that. What's next on your list? Where haven't you gone yet that you're definitely, you've got plans that you want to get to?
Well, I've already got booked in September a tour of CERN in Switzerland to go and see some of the particle accelerators there. So that's already scheduled, and I hadn't been to see that. The place I would really like to schedule is to go and see the Trinity test site in White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's where the first nuclear bomb was exploded, and it's only open twice a year, the first Saturday of April and October. It's completely free to go there, but you have to schedule it in advance, and obviously being in the UK, I've got to get over to the States to see it. But I think that would probably be an extremely moving thing to go and see, because to see the flattened land and the obelisk they've placed right at the spot where the Trinity explosion was done.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's unfortunate, I know for myself, that a lot of these locations that are in the U.S., they're even relatively local to Illinois. I have not been myself. What were some of the favorite locations? Are there places that you're going to get back to, you think, and that you'll go back and visit again, or that really you may not go back to, but really stood out for you?
Well, I mean, I think there are some that I go back to just because they're close to me in London and I can pop into them easily. Mm. So the museum where Michael Faraday did his work, where he invented the transformer and the dynamo and the motor, that is actually, his actual lab is preserved in the Royal Institution in London, and it's free to go into it. It's one of those almost shrines that you can go back to a lot.
Yeah.
In the States, the thing that I would love to get a chance to go back to is the National Cryptologic Museum, which is in Maryland, and it's the NSA's museum. And I think most people don't even realize the NSA has a museum, And it's absolutely tremendous history of secrets and codes.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah, that would be fascinating. It's funny, we were just coincidentally, our last individual we had on air was someone who worked closely with the CIA and with Tenet, and was talking a lot about the cryptography and the history of that. He never mentioned, and I don't know if he was aware, that there is this museum, as you mentioned, in Maryland, where you can see some of the equipment that they use there. And
originally, it was the NSA's private museum. You couldn't go to it unless you were an NSA employee. And then eventually they decided to open it to the public. And the reason I recommend it so highly is they have a Nazi German Enigma machine in there. Ooh. Obviously, there are a few around the world, but I believe it's unique in that they let you actually use it. It's just sitting there on the side, and you can type on it and make it work.
Wow. Oh, really? Oh, I had no idea. That's...
See, 60 years old, still working good German engineering. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I wonder if wonder how much time they spend keeping it. Of course, if it's not well publicized, I guess they don't get probably a lot of people walking through and using it. And there are. I was really surprised at the number of science and history types of things that there were available in the U.S. It seems the United States being a bit newer in the technology. There's the things like One Infinite Loop in California, where Apple is based. And I expected to see some quote unquote shrines to new technology, but there was really some pretty neat stuff all throughout the U.S. that harks back to more what I consider classical science information.
Well, I think there's two very important things in the U.S. One is there is a tendency to openness, and so if you look at many of the sites there are in the U.S. Such as the very large array in New Mexico where they have these enormous radio telescopes, there's a visitor center. You can take a tour of it. And that's a general theme. So when I lived in the States, and actually when I was researching the book, it was very easy to get information because I think there's a general openness, which there is not in some other countries. And the other thing is, the U.S. is a young country, but it was born at a time when, we had already gone through the real birth of science, and you were already on to, okay, we can actually make inventions and do the technological things that need to happen. So if you look at the 19th century, there's a tremendous amount of stuff happened in the 19th century, and the U.S. was there to be involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
What sites are worth traveling to?
Would you say just in the U.S. or, around the world?
Since we're broadcasting in the U.S., or either way, but since we're from the U.S., well, for instance, what sites would be worth traveling to in England or other? What do you consider some of the most important sites around the world?
If someone from the Chicago area here were listening and said, "I want to pick out some place to arrange a world tour to," I mean, what would you say? This is the one place in the world that you gotta go as a geek. Whether it's America or wherever.
Well, if you're in Chicago, you need to go to Fermilab, because that's in Illinois. It's just down the road from you, and if you want to see a particle accelerator, it's not far away.
Yep.
So you definitely got to start there. Then I think you need to look at, there are some... In England, if you're going to go to one thing in England, because it's very hard to pick, but for me, it would probably be Charles Darwin's house. The reason for that is, in the garden... There is this pathway that Darwin built so that he could wander. He could basically take an exercise walk every day. And so you can walk there along this pathway where Darwin thought about the theory of natural selection. And that's quite an amazing moment. And then, of course, going to his house and see his equipment. So I think that's sort of one of those, it's not a museum, it's really a standout location.
Yeah.
In the U.S., obviously, I've mentioned the National Cryptologic Museum. On the other side of the country, the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California, is excellent. If you really want to understand computer history, I would go there. Obviously, it doesn't cover all of the non-U.S. history of the computer, the invention of the computer, but it is a very, very good museum, and it's very important to take a tour with somebody because many of the people who do the tours actually worked on the equipment that's on display. So if you did those three things already, you'd have tremendous things. If you're going further in Europe, I think in Paris, there are a number of really standout sites. Foucault's pendulum, which proves or just demonstrates that the Earth is rotating, is still swinging where it swung in the 19th century every day. And so that's quite amazing. You can stand and see it in the Pantheon. And actually, the equivalent of the Air and Space Museum in Paris is tremendous because it has pre sort of 18th century, so 17th century equipment made by people like Pascal, his adding machines and things like that. And it has a wonderful piece of equipment that was used to measure the speed of light during the 19th century using a fascinating rotating disk and a collection of mirrors. So those are really great places. If you go to India, there's a wonderful stone observatory in Jaipur called the Jantar Mantar, which is a massive, I mean, literally acres site of huge stone equipment used to observe the heavens. Including an absolutely enormous sundial, meters and meters in size.
Oh, cool! I'm looking at a picture of it right now, as a matter of fact, that you've included in the book. And yeah, it's phenomenal. That looks very, very cool, especially considering the level of technology that must have been available or that wasn't available at the time to build that.
You know, in the U.S., I mean, I would pick the nearest NASA site to you and go visit it. It doesn't, you know, obviously the Kennedy Space Center is incredibly important, but there are many other NASA sites. I think NASA has a tremendous amount of educational information available for people, and that is a wonderful thing. If I had to pick one, which is a little bit unusual, I would go to Fort Irwin in California, which is the Deep Space Communications Complex, and that's where NASA communicates with all the probes and spacecraft that are out there. So when they want to chat with Voyager 1, which is currently 30 years out from Earth, gone from our solar system, it's in California that they do that. And the other reason to do that is that's where the Apollo astronauts train. So there's an area of that called Apollo Valley, which is a very desolate area. And that itself, you know, you can see both modern and ancient space travel, really.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. What was one last question here? I think we're going to have to start bringing us to a close. Dave's always looking at his watch here. he's the one that keeps me in check. But one question I'm really curious about is, like I said, there's a tremendous number of places that you went to. What was one of the most difficult places to get to? Because some of these, I mean, you've got locations in Serbia, in the Ukraine, you've got places in Serbia, in Japan. Some of these must have been very difficult to actually get to see and to spend time at. Was there anywhere that gave you a particularly difficult time? And was it worth it?
Not with enough planning in advance, no. I mean, the place I'd like to go and visit, but I can't, which is inside the CIA headquarters, is the Kryptos sculpture. So unless the CIA invites me, I'll be unable to do that.
Well, maybe after the broadcast today, you'll get a call.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And I know that some of the locations you mentioned specifically, this is one thing that really makes it a useful book, too, is that it doesn't just identify the places, but it gives some practical information about getting in them. One of them was a college in the UK, Keys.
Gondolin Keys, yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned specifically, basically, I'm going to tell you what's in there, but your chances of getting in and seeing the stained glass Venn diagrams and all the other business is pretty remote because you'd have to be friends with someone from the university.
Yeah, you'd have to befriend a student in the college. Now, having said that, when I was at college, I often let people into the college to take a look at something interesting where I was, and, you know,
yeah,
it would be worth a try asking someone.
Yeah, well, and I guess if you've got 20 pounds in your hand while you're requesting that favor, it might be a little easier. Mr. Graham Cummings, I am extremely happy that we were able to have you on, and I would recommend to anyone to grab a copy of the Geek Atlas. Like I said, whether they're planning on going on a trip or not, I was absolutely fascinated, and it's a book that I'm going to keep for quite some time just to flip through and read the information. You certainly present not only a breadth of information, but there's enough of a depth of it here that it's going to give anyone who picks it up something to grab onto and something of interest to review.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad you enjoyed the book so much.
Yeah, well, and thank you for spending your time and connecting with us from far away England. We're very, very happy to have had you on.
Thanks so much for being here.
It's raining.
All right. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Amazing interview. Just an amazing interview.
Well, just a fantastic gentleman himself. I was worried about trying to have too many specific questions because I knew that he was going to have so much information to provide to us, and I was not disappointed. Again, I want to mention it is called The Geek Atlas, 128 Places Where Science and Technology Come Alive. John Graham Cumming, it's an O'Reilly book. I'll have links to it when I publish the podcast that you can find it directly on Amazon. Really, really fantastic. Very cool book. It's one of those you can put it next to your armchair and just keep picking up and pulling out any location. It's one of those you just open it up randomly and you'll find something new and interesting that you haven't
found
before.
And with deep background on these sites.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Just cool stuff. So what do we have now? We've got and of course as soon as I say something I knock myself out of the thing here.
Cool sites. Is it time for cool sites?
Why isn't it going? Oh, there we go. It's the Tech Talk Show. That's why we've got to have talk about how completely incompetent I am at running the technology in the station.
Oh, you do a fine job.
All right. And of course, all of the time that I spent getting that queued up just so that you could hear our wonderful music meant that I don't have
cool sites of the week.
I don't have the cool sites of the week up and ready to go.
There's now, so many.
There are. And actually, in fact, this last week, I ran across a bunch that were just so, so cool. One I want to give you right off the top here that I've been having a blast with is called Groove Shark. This is
like
cool.
The name.
This is cool.
Yeah.
It's similar to some of the other streaming music sites that were around for a while and got shut down or lost or wherever they went to. Who knows? Grooveshark, open it up, type in the name of a song, and it'll play for you. I know a lot of people use YouTube for this nowadays, but if you just want clean audio and it's a better quality audio typically than what you find, and it will find, every blasted song. You just type in the name of the song and wham, there it is. So I love that. In fact, that's how I was playing Galvanize this morning for our good friend Steven St. Louis. You might have noticed that, where our interstitial. We've got
I just want to let you know I purchased our Replay RV, AV.
Oh, Jeff Davis is commenting. One of our sponsors of the show, Replay AV. Jeff Davis just purchased that himself.
I used it to piece together segments of our Justin.
Well, come on the I don't know which
pick one.
One
of these two. Well, I'll try both.
There we go. He's in stereo.
I used it to piece together the audio to grab the audio off of our Justin site.
Oh yes.
Because
then you bring them together.
Whatever audio editing you want to do, and you can piece them all together. But it's great for recording because you don't have to sit there and go through the whole thing.
Excellent.
Then you click on it, it starts downloading the audio for you instantaneously.
I was really happy to get them as a sponsor of the show because their product is a high quality and it's really good stuff. I've used it myself too, and always been happy with it.
Just the testimonial, it works great.
There you go. And you can find links to that at techtalk.wrlr.fm. And of course, we appreciate it if you do use our link.
They have not been our sponsor for a long time.
For a while. They're still, you know what?
But they still do a fine job.
Yeah. But if you're looking to be a sponsor, anyone listening out there, just send me an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm. We would love to have your money. I got one. Dave's looking at the clock again here. I do have some more. Cool sites I wanted to tell. One thing that we're playing with today, if you're listening or watching us, you can actually watch us on twitcam.com now.
Yeah.
I am using, Jeff is waving in the screen there. Twitcam.com. I don't know if anybody has been watching or paying attention to it. Like I said, I have not been watching my tweets. But if you wanted to broadcast yourself live, you're a Twitter person, you're one of these Twitterers, as I am myself, and you wanted to get live audio and video out for people to listen to, it's easier than ever now. As long as you've got your camera, you've got your microphone, and most of the laptops have got them built in now anyways. Yeah. You go to twitcam.com and just type in your Twitter name, and not only will you be broadcasting and live broadcast at that moment, but it's going to broadcast it out for you through Twitter, and people will know about it. All your followers will be able to click in and watch and comment and talk to you back and forth while you're right there. So, that's
you
how
mean
easy
chat.
It is. Chat.
Okay.
Yeah. Tweet.
Well, I'm not hearing it. Yeah, exactly. And, 140 characters.
And the beautiful beautiful thing, too, is that when you're done with it, you click the stop recording and begin archiving, and it archives the show, holds it for you. So if you're doing a demonstration or a live talk to people to you know, give a some instructional video, say, for example, how to do something with back and forth, you can record that. It automatically records that and pulls it together for you. So very cool stuff on that. There's a couple of other ones that are starting to do that, too. Justin.tv, which we've used for a long time, has started doing it. They haven't implemented it as well, I don't believe, as TwitCam. We'll see how they come along. CamTweet also is another one that does pretty much the same thing. So if you can remember TwitCam or CamTweet, one or the other, you'll get there. And CamTweet, I've also I did not play with this week. I may try it next week or next time that we're on and see how that works for us. But
so
cool
social networking takes another step.
It just keeps it just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. And you know what? We've got time. I'm surprised we've got as much time as we do here, and Jeff isn't screaming at me yet to get off of the air. So I'm going to give us one last one, and that we're going to do is this. This is really cool. Do you have a bunch of like electronic equipment around the house, and then you try to figure out how you're supposed to do something and you just can't? Or even like your oven or something, and you need to add something or change something, and
oh, sure.
You don't know how to do it?
Happens all the time.
And where did the manual
go? The older I get, the worse it gets.
Where did those manuals go? I don't know where it went. You know, me and my wife were yelling at each other. I don't know. Why would we keep a manual? It's for an oven. You don't need it for a flipping oven.
Now you do with all the electronics.
Now we got to put something in. Well, if you lost it, go to the usermanualsite.com. And that is the name of this place, is the usermanualsite.com. Very cool. You can look up for manuals, user manuals, on pretty much any product out there. It'll have them in PDF format. You pull them up, and it also, too, gives you a place where you can collect and store them. So if you create an account and log in, you can just find all the user manuals for all the stuff, and then when you need one, but just go right there.
Yeah.
So feel free to toss
them. And you can eliminate that shelf or drawer full of old manuals for products you don't even have anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, which we've got a ton of that kind of stuff. Now, me personally, I didn't create an account there. I just downloaded the manuals that I needed, and I popped them into Evernote because I'm still a huge fan of Evernote. So if you haven't tried Evernote yet, that's gonna be one of my top year's cool sites of the week is Evernote. I've just been loving the heck out of that. And I think on that note, we'll let you go. Now this is truly a podcast only song of the week. I cannot play this whole thing. I'll give you about a minute of it to get a taste, and then. And then I got to flip over to something a little more
safe.
Radio
friendly.
Radio friendly. Yeah. Exactly. So the song, which is podcast only song of the week, the artist is Black Landlord, and the name of the song is Dear God, and it's got a little old school rap feel to it, hip-hop rap, and it's just some good stuff. I've been jamming to it the last week or so good stuff. Make sure and check out The Geek Atlas by Dr. John Graham Cumming, and look for our podcast coming out on techtalk.wrlr.fm within the next couple of days.
Our thanks to Jay Garman and Dr. Cummings.
Absolutely.
And fantastic.
And, of course, to Customer Jones for answering our questions so well, too. And don't forget, you can answer those questions, techtalk@wrlr.fm. You have been listening to the Tech Talk Show on WRLR 98.3 FM.
She heard a little rumor that her mom had two tumors. You'd be right to assume that she had a sense of humor. Heard her telling Richie Bruder
she got two less bazoomas.
She hooked her with a crooner just a little bit sooner than she wanted to. Took her to the moon, all she wanted, who, what, where, why. These questions cried out, there was no reply when she opened her mouth. No doubt, she needed to be heard. Her words, was she a learned man? All she observed, when is my turn? What will I learn? Who will I burn? Why must I yearn? What? Dear God, help me find a home. Should have found someone.
blame on our shoulders. If this man who starts to roar, then this man who kills the soldiers. Famine is so bogus, examine the plan and focus. One hand is planning the fate, the other straight strokers. Human life is like an opus, my hope is we get the closest. Whatever the fucking jokers, hope the punchline don't choke us. Disease and famine and rotus, greed be killing children. God don't be that villain, holding back the penicillin. A creature will inhabit, more willing to kill the habit. Be hit by backstabbing, are you fathoming what's happening? Is this the world I'm rapping in, the thoughts that I be rattling? Made a brother grab a pen and let them know I'm mad again. Humanity be slacking like a hippie backpacking. I'm unwrapping a bitch slapping like Sammy Davis was tapping. Your conscience is dirt napping, cause ego just bust a cap in his ass. You can't grasp the moment you passed out. You may have just asked out the second you asked out. Religion removes doubt that we're all not alone. Dear God, help me find a hook. Should've felt something all that time it took. He went to me and said you ain't even looking. Turned around and finished reading his book. Please God, help me find a hook. I've been a good boy, Lord, I ain't no crook. He has the last place I looked. But when I turned around, he finished reading that book. I am far from malicious. For some of y'all bitches be hitting the wrong switches. Like a saw some scissors, lyrics cuts leaving stitches. Like finding Mrs. Bridges in the bedroom of your Mrs. Crib. Take your ass off, what I should've did. But I'm way too pretty to do a murder bid. Don't antagonize disasters, you might get what you after. You might be just an actor, classic overreactor. Not a pack, not a little. It's a fact, it's no riddle. That you scared across the middle. You more tender than bento. There's no room to wiggle, then you weasel and you wriggle out. So what's the reason that you opened up your freaking mouth? Dear God, help me find a hook. Should've found something all that time it took. He went to me and said you ain't even looking. Turned around and finished reading this book. Please God, help me find a hook. I've been a good boy, Lord, I ain't no crook. He asked the last place I looked. But when I turned around, he finished reading that book. Oh. Oh.